Hey everyone, welcome in to another edition of the Woj Pod, a all Celtic Cavalier post Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving trade episode with ESPN front office insider Bobby Marks. Stay with us. Welcome into ESPN front office insider Bobby Marks. Bobby, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So finally, the Celtics-Cavs deal completes on Thursday night. Boston will send a 2020 second-round pick from Miami to Cleveland, and now Kyrie Irving goes to the Cavs, and Isaiah Thomas and that great 2018 Nets pick goes to Cleveland. Bobby, you've been involved in a lot of deals through the years. You were a part of, in New Jersey, Sharif Abdul-Rahim not passing his physical. That was a free agent signing. That wasn't a trade. You had an interesting tweet, I think, at the end of this last night after the story broke, that you felt this would have been a pretty bad precedent to set if Boston ended up having to give up a first in this. Why do you think that?
Well, I just think where trades are these days is that it could have opened up a can of worms going forward, not with Boston or Cleveland, but who's not to say a team at the trade deadline is not happy with the package they get, or something pops up on the physical that maybe didn't show when they were disclosing information here. And to reopen something that's already agreed upon, I just think it's a slippery slope. You know, when you were talking about Sharif, it was a sign and trade, but we weren't giving anything up for him back in 2005 in that sign and trade when he was a free agent. This was totally different here. And I just think if it got to the point, and I would have fully understood if Danny Ainge had to give up a late first round pick, if it was their own, or maybe even that Clipper pick, just to get that deal done, because the magnitude of the return of Kyrie Irving, I would not have faulted him at all. But I'm happy that he didn't budge off that. It's a second rounder. It'll probably be in the 40s there. But I just talking with teams over the course of the last couple days here, that was really the content was, hey, it's agreed upon deal. The medical information was shared. Yes, maybe your doctors feel a little bit differently than the Celtics doctors, but what's agreed upon, you know, it should be your word here.
Yeah, and I think in the end, too, Cleveland most valued the draft pick. That, listen, of course they want Isaiah to play well this year. They need him to play well if they're going to achieve at a high level, if they're going to win the East again. But you're right. They knew that he was very unlikely to start the season. We know now he's not going to be ready to start the season. But I think in the end, that was as much of a reason as anything of why this deal was not going to fall apart, was that I just think the consequences for both teams were too great. And to go back to square one, let's look at it from Cleveland's point of view. Let's say hypothetically one of these teams is willing to walk away from this deal. Cleveland goes back with Kyrie Irving, who has demanded a trade, who doesn't want to not only play another day in Cleveland, he didn't want to have to go to camp. He didn't want to have to be there another day. And I'm not sure he would have. I'm not sure if training camp opened, Kyrie Irving would have showed up. Cleveland didn't like the deals they had outside of Boston's before that deal was agreed to. So why would you think now that the offers from elsewhere in the NBA were going to get better for Kyrie with Boston now not part of the bidding process? There's no reason for anyone to start adding things into offers, Bobby, right, that they hadn't offered before, given they're not competing with Boston for him anymore.
And what it also does is it puts a lot of pressure on Kobe Altman, their new GM there, that here is what you could have had with Crowder and the Nets pick and Ante Zicic, and although Isaiah Thomas is injured right now, compared to what you're going to get. So to compare the Boston package to maybe a team like Phoenix or we've heard Milwaukee, I never thought that you were ever going to get the same amount of value. And that takes into account if Isaiah Thomas never steps on the court in Cleveland this year, which I certainly believe he will. I just thought the Nets pick and Crowder and Zicic, it's basically two first rounders and Crowder, and let's see where Isaiah is from a health perspective. I never thought that what else was out there would have aligned with what Boston was offering.
Yeah, that was the thing. That pick, that Brooklyn pick, which, you know, we can debate where it's going to fall. They're going to be better I don't think they're the worst team in the East this year. I think they could be better than Chicago. They could be better than Atlanta. And the one thing you know is, like, that team is going to play hard. They're going to be in games. Kenny Atkinson showed that. I don't think that's a number one or two overall pick. Now, it could turn out to be, but it's still a high pick, and it's better than anything else. When Cleveland looked around at the young players, they couldn't get Josh Jackson from Phoenix. They couldn't get at Denver's two really good young players and Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. And I'm not sure Jamal Murray, he's very good. I'm not sure he's a top two, like you'd look at him and say he's better than what's available, the top two, three, four in the draft. And in the end, that wasn't there for them. And so no matter how they looked at this, because that's what they did value in this deal, which speaks to really their confidence level in being able to keep LeBron James.
Well, and the deal also reminds me of a lot when we traded for Deron Williams back in 2011, too. Remember what we gave up there? We gave up, Devin Harris, which, Isaiah is certainly an upgrade. Derek Favors, if you want to compare him to Jay Crowder from a contract perspective. And then, a lottery pick that turned into Anis Kanter and a pick that turned into Gorgui Jang. So it kind of all aligns up there. I just thought that this deal, just from all sides, had to go through because of, can you imagine going into training camp with Kyrie? And for Boston's sake, can you imagine going into a season with a combination of Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart for a team that, certainly has eyes on trying to get to the NBA Finals here?
Yeah, and Boston's sort of case of why we would walk away from this was, hey, we'll still have that pick. We still have Jay Crowder to use in a deal. You could potentially use Marcus Smart in a deal if you wanted. That they felt they could still go out and get another point guard in a trade at some point. If, let's say, Isaiah Thomas was hurt, wasn't going to play, you didn't re-sign him, that they were in position to go out. But there still was not going to be anybody the caliber of Kyrie Irving available to them. Like, that player, no matter what, I just don't think that guard's out there. And, again, it just – for both teams, the idea of trying to bring all these guys back, it forced them to get the deal done. And so obviously Cleveland stopped pushing when they realized Boston wasn't budging past the second round pick. And now they never have to wonder what would happen if they had to bring those guys back in.
No, you're right. And, the interesting thing is, and I had a discussion with a bunch of teams about this, and you can't do it based on the league, but on the league rules. But can you imagine if you were able to put some, benchmarks for compensation for, let's say in this case with Isaiah Thomas, that if he played in a certain amount of games, then the pick is based on, if he plays in less than 55 games, then Cleveland would have gotten Boston's first this year.
You could do that in football, right?
Oh, you could. Yeah, you can definitely do that. You see that all the time. A second round pick can turn to a third round pick, and I think it would have been pretty neat in this case here. But I think that, like we talked about earlier in the beginning here, I think you're going down a slippery slope because you're relying on your own doctors to judge a player who should be healthy. I mean, I think you could do if it was a pre-existing injury, like in this case with Isaiah Thomas, but I think you would have probably had a deal done probably quicker, maybe over the weekend if you were able to do that, but you can't, and we move on here.
Being in that situation where a player asks for a trade like Kyrie did in Cleveland, once it gets out, once everybody knows he's asked out, how much more difficult is it to get value for that player? Is everyone just hold back on offers because they feel like you're in a desperate place and you've lost your leverage?
I think it depends on the years they have left on a contract. I think if you're comparing it to Paul George, where we all knew he was going to opt out of his contract and be a free agent, although, before the Laker news came out in late June, we thought maybe Indiana had his chance of bringing him back. I think that's a little bit different than Kyrie, who has 2 years, but I think you lose a lot of leverage from a team perspective, at least from Cleveland, because here's a player who, although he's got 2 years left, you don't know if you're the team acquiring him or interested in him, if there is going to be a long-term commitment. Now, in Boston's case, he'll be there till 2019, and they've got a good feeling that there's going to be a long-term marriage here. So you're willing to give up a little bit more, but in the case of some other teams, I think that's where Cleveland is really kind of behind the eight ball, because you're not going to get a full package here. If Kyrie Irving had 4 years left and he had just signed maybe a new contract, I think teams are willing to commit a little bit more here, but I think that's where at least teams are skeptical. Yes, 2 years is great. You can sell him on the organization in the future here, but what happens if we give up an Eric Bledsoe and a Josh Jackson and a Miami pick or picks there, and he's gone in 2 years? Now we're kind of back to square one, and that's where teams are hesitant.
Yeah, Phoenix was hesitant on that. You know, in their minds, I feel like we've got Josh Jackson for 7 years, maybe 9 years, right, based on rookie extension and everything. So, right, the risk for them with a player who, you know, if they get better in 2 years and could go out in free agency, like you said, he's very likely going to resign in Boston. Like, what else would you want in a team, an organization? You've got a contender, you're in a great market, great organization, coach, front office, everything's there for Kyrie to thrive. This rebuild by Boston, in a lot of ways, it's complete now. Like, this is, listen, they have assets to go do something else big. Somebody becomes available if Anthony Davis will continue to be talked about. There was a workout in New Orleans this week, and I was just imagining Anthony Davis walking in the gym. So they lose Solomon Hill for maybe the season, most of the season. It's small forward, and they're trying to re-sign Dante Cunningham, worried they may lose him to Minnesota. And so they have a workout there with, I'm told, Josh Smith, Chase Budinger, Martell Webster.
Oh, I didn't even know he was still playing.
I didn't know he was still playing either. And I'm like, could you imagine Anthony walking in the gym and seeing that and going, one of these guys might play 25 minutes a game for us this year, and we're trying to make the playoffs, and I want to win championships? Like, you know, so, like, who knows what happens with Anthony Davis, and he's been super loyal, though, to trying to make it work there. So, anyway, maybe he becomes available, maybe he doesn't in a year or so. But the beginning of this rebuild, like, you know, certainly it goes back to, I don't want to go Chris Mannix on you here, Bobby. It goes back to the deal with the Nets and with KG and Paul Pierce. But one thing that was always interesting about that deal, Bobby, and you were, when you guys were trying to make the pieces fit, like the players and salaries match up, Keith Bogans was in that deal. If you look at the picture of the press conference, there's Keith Bogans. Chris Forsberg wrote about it in his piece on ESPN.com. And there's Bogans in the piece, in the picture. Bogans was basically out of the league, right? He was not playing, and you were doing the math and said, okay, how do we make this work? And Keith Bogans got like a lottery ticket out of this, right?
You're right. I mean, we can go back and I'm sure we've all scrutinized the picks and stuff, but I would tell you that was probably one of the most creative trades, at least from a player perspective, as far as trying to line up that deal. And yeah, Bogans was with us, the year before. I believe we had early bird rights on him, or bird rights. He played in the playoffs, didn't play towards the end, and we weren't going to re-sign him there. He was kind of a little bit up there in age, and to get his salary to match, we had to do basically a sign-in trade. We signed him to a 3-year, $15.8 million contract. The first year was guaranteed. It was at $5 million. Years 2 and 3 weren't. And that's how the math worked. And I remember calling him telling him, hey, Keith, I need to send you some exhibits to sign. And he says, for what? I said, well, we're trading you to Boston. He says, really? I said, but you're going to get $5 million and you probably only have to show up there. And every time I see him, he gives me a hug. And at the time, I mean, Bogans was, so that was 2013. I mean, Keith was 30, 33, 34 years old. You know, he had made some good money in his career, but never at that, he made 15, I think he made around like 20, 25, $30 million, but he made $5 million and didn't have to do anything at all. And that's how we got all the pieces to line up because of, Keith Bogans. It's similar to, the rule has changed, but it's similar to back in 2008 when we added Keith Van Horn in the deal.
Keith Van Horn rode a bike in the facility for a month, right?
And they changed the rule because Van Horn hadn't been on a roster, I think, he had basically been retired, hadn't been on a roster for 2 years, and we needed him to, Dallas needed to add him to the deal and send him to us. And he came to our facility for a month and sat in our media room and read a book.
And how How much did he get paid for that?
Oh, I don't know. I got to pull up his contract. But and then finally, it got to a point where you're like, Keith, yeah, we really need you to go in the weight room and at least get on a bike here. From that perspective, and yeah. it was crazy. And he had played
the last team he had played for was Dallas, right? So they could put him in the deal. Is that what it was?
Yeah, he earned $4.3 million. He got in that deal for coming in 07-08. And that rule has now been changed. I call it the Keith Van Horn rule, where basically, if you finish the season on a roster and don't play for more than a year, then you can't be used in a sign and trade. So in this case, it wouldn't happen. Bogans, it would have happened because he just finished with us. But yeah, that's how the Keith Van Horn that rule was changed, and then Bogans made out on $5 million to make that deal work. If without Keith Bogans, that trade would not have probably not have happened.
And then there's always two though in those deals, right? The player you drafted 7 years ago from Serbia, who might even be retired in Europe, whose rights you would put. So certain players whose rights keep floating around the NBA, right? Like
Christian Dreyer. We had Christian Dreyer's rights for about 15 years, right? I think we drafted him in the late 90s, and we tried to put him in a deal. Just because you have to, if you're sending something, you always have to send something out, either
you
cash
can't just
or pick.
Send, right,
no.
Right, right.
I mean, right. if it's money, it's got to be up to a certain amount. If it's a pick, or a player, so the rights to a player. So we tried putting Christian Dreyer in a deal, and I remember talking to people at the league office, and they said, wait a minute, like, I'm on Wikipedia right now, and he's been retired for like 3 years. And I said, really? I thought I saw him in a uniform a year ago. and then it drove me crazy because the league would always keep in their system, it always have like Nets have the draft rights to Christian Dreyer. And I always tell him, he's like, he's retired. I can't add him in a deal anymore. But yeah, those are those players that when you see are thrown into a deal, you have a draft, rights. I mean, I think the Knicks still have the draft rights of Frederick Weiss or Orlando Fran Vasquez. Those first round picks. But yeah, those are the, those European stash that you sometimes come in handy when you need to add them.
Bobby, before we continue on here on this ultimate completion of the Boston-Cleveland trade, let's talk about hard work leading to being the best. Did you know that a tip of a Gillette razor blade is measured on an atomic scale, meaning their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell? Over 1,000 craftsmen and women in Boston are busy making your blades. Meanwhile, another team is putting your blades through more than 60 extremely strict and precise quality checks. Fail just one of these tests and it doesn't leave the factory. In other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now that includes the price tag. You can get Gillette blades at their lowest prices in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer. That's GilletteOnDemand.com. GilletteOnDemand.com. This rebuild that Danny Ainge, from hiring a coach to the deals he's made, and obviously the watershed deals here was obviously the Brooklyn deal that got them the picks that they kept flipping into, which at this draft they flipped into another pick, and then the Isaiah Thomas trade, getting him from Phoenix for what was essentially a late first round pick. And, then in free agency getting two all-stars, in Al Horford and Gordon Hayward. And then obviously now Kyrie. In the modern NBA era, teams have rebuilt off of obviously one, getting the number one pick, getting a franchise guy and going from there. But there's never really been a rebuild quite like this, given where they were just 4 years ago.
No, there isn't. I mean, I looked at it in different phases. That 13-14 year, the year after the trade, that was the year they were in the lottery. And then I always considered them, even though they were playoff teams the last few years, a playoff team that was still rebuilding. Even last year when they got to an Eastern Conference Finals and when they had all these assets, I just felt that Danny had been so patient, and that even at the trade deadline when Jimmy Butler or Paul George, or in the offseason, that he still needed to be patient because there was still going to be a deal that would have enabled him to get a lot better this summer with cap space and also keep his picks. And And remember, usually when you make these big deals and you land that 25-year-old point guard, you basically have to gut your roster and your assets and replenish it. And now you really have a small window here, but now you've got Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Rozier Smart there. And you still have all these picks left. We forget about that, your own picks, right? So they'll be in the late 20s probably. That Laker pick, if it falls into 2-5, in 2008, they'll get that, or it will be either Philly's or Sacramento's in 2019. That's an appealing pick. That Memphis pick that nobody ever talks about in 2019, that Grizzly team, I think, could be headed towards,
they could be very, they probably are not going to be a playoff team in 2019.
No, and it's protected 1-8, then 1-6, and then eventually it becomes unprotected, and that's an appealing pick. The Clipper pick, who knows where the Clippers will be in a couple years, but that's still protected 1-14, and they've got a ton of seconds to be able to throw in deals. And I don't think they're done one bit at all. I mean, I think Boston is content with this roster right now, but I think knowing that Mike Zarin and Danny Ainge up there, that they've got an eye out for their next deal. And I think that's why holding on to either their own first or the Memphis pick or even that Clipper pick that we don't know might turn into much is setting up themselves up to either, keep on building through the draft or add in a deal down the road.
Yeah, they're probably still one really, really good player away from being able to think they can compete with Golden State. I mean, do you think this is a team, let's say they break through and got to the finals this year. I don't think they're quite there yet. I mean, nobody may ever be there with this Golden State team, but maybe there's one more big deal out there in the next, 12, 24 months that puts them there with the Warriors, or you think they're further away?
No, I do. I think it'll be interesting, the development of Jason Tatum, how far along he progresses here. Certainly he could be more than one of the picks that they have could be the next to get that next great player. You talked about Anthony Davis down there in New Orleans. But as you know, wings are hard to find, and if he has a breakthrough year and he develops into a future all-star, I think he certainly has appeal there. But hey, I mean, we look at where Golden State is and where they're going to be. It's hard to say, who's that next player, unless it is a top 10 type player. You've got a top 15 player in Kyrie, probably a top 15, top 20 player in Gordon, and Al's certainly still good here. But I still think you need another player, for the long haul. I mean, if LeBron leaves in next summer, then you'll be you'll be in the best in East for the considerable future here. But I think the end goal is certainly to win a championship, and how you stack up against Golden State or even a team like Houston.
How do you imagine Kyrie fits in with that Boston group? How he meshes with Gordon Hayward? How he balances the role of distributor, playmaker, and scorer? Are you curious to see what's the evolution of this guy in this new place with a team that's obviously, there's a lot of talent around him, but it's a very, unlike Cleveland where the ball was in LeBron's hands a lot, he's going to have it in his hands in Boston.
You're right, and I'm interested to see training camp for them. I think they need to get guys in that gym post Labor Day relatively soon. We forget how many new faces they have there. I mean, I know Horford is back, and you've got Smart and Brown and Rozier, but you look at that roster, and everybody is either has been drafted or were signed in as a free agent or traded for. Marcus Morris, for example. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised if when we get going here, at least for the early part of the season, that they stub their toe a little bit, just trying to integrate some of these new faces. It's just like, the NFL throwing a new quarterback out there, and how does he mesh in with a Horford and a Gordon Hayward. And now you've got a new coach, and I can't even count how many coaches Kyrie's had since he was in the last, 7 years in Cleveland and now with Brad Stevens in Boston. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a slow process here to try to integrate all these different pieces. I think the end game is to kind of, hit your stride post New Year's.
In Cleveland, we'll see how long Isaiah is going to be out and when he can get back. Until then, Derrick Rose is there. I don't know how many minutes a game point guard he is anymore on a contender anyway. I would just imagine LeBron's going to play a lot of point, right? Like LeBron, who already handles the ball a lot, LeBron's going to have to take a lot of those duties, and which does take more out of him, which is what you worry about, is you just, you're taxing him physically more in the regular season. But what else do they do there?
Well, you know, that's what they do. They put the ball in his hands, and if Rose is on the court, you play him at off guard. I mean, that's probably the best position for Derrick Rose. You've got a lot of wings. So, you know, where does Shumpert fit in? We've heard, certainly his name kind of been dangled out there. Shumpert, you brought back Korver. You've got Crowder, Jefferson, Cede Osman, you drafted, a couple years ago. Now you have Over, Jeff Green. So there's a lot of, I guess, interchangeable, positions here, but I think, you know, the Rose Calderon back, you know, until Isaiah gets back, I don't know how long that can sustain to be at that level Cleveland is. They certainly, their depth has gotten better, but I would expect LeBron probably to have the ball in his hands a lot more. And you're right. It does take a lot out of your body to constantly, I mean, we always think he's going to be invincible forever. So when is the year where he misses 10 to 15 games with, maybe a tweak here or a tweak there? So I think that's certainly something to watch.
You know, in Cleveland too, what I'm very curious to see, and I think we have our answer by what they valued in this trade, which was future draft pick. You know, last year when they wanted to make that team better, they gave up a pick. They went out and got Kyle Korver in the season. I don't see them giving up future assets anymore in a win now mode, despite the fact that this is LeBron's last year. I think they're going to hedge because they've given up a lot of assets going forward. They've given up picks. You know, think about when they traded Verge out of Portland and gave up picks to trade him into space a couple years ago. You know, some of those things that, you know, cost you. And I think you sort of see the team they have, and you mentioned like Shumpert. Yeah, maybe if there's a deal for Shumpert out there, but people haven't been lining up for, you know, what is he, $10 million a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So this is kind of the team, and you just, for them, the sooner they get Isaiah back, the better, but I'm not sure you're going to see the roster. I think the days of them doubling down and going forward are over.
You're right. I think that Nets pick is untouchable. I think it's untouchable even if a player, let's say if we talked about New Orleans earlier, if DeMarcus Cousins becomes available, I think it's untouchable even if you're able to get him, because why would you trade for, and if LeBron leaves, now you're stuck with, you know, both guys potentially gone, and you're out a top five pick. Even their own pick, which will probably be in the 20s, which they can now trade now because they have that Nets pick, and you can do so. I would still hold on to that just based on your goal right now is to try to compete for a championship and asset retention. So you've got two picks in the 2018 draft, probably top six in a pick in the 20s. You've got that second you got in that from Miami. Although that Atlanta has a pick in 2019, but I think your focus right now is all on 2018 post LeBron if he does leave, and as far as how you start rebuilding this with some of these young players.
Let me ask you, let's say you were Cleveland and LeBron had told you, hey, listen, I'm committed. I'm going to stay, you know, plan for me to be here, and you believe it, and you are preparing to do the Kyrie Irving trade. How would the trade look different to you if you were building out your team to keep building around him? Do you think Boston, that would have still been the deal? Or do you think, would you have done maybe San Antonio and said, okay, you guys would give us LaMarcus Aldridge and DeJounte Murray, we treat him like a future first. He's 19 years old. He's a point guard. He's shown a lot of promise. And would you have built out a deal from the Spurs and said, okay, let's get, you know, whether it's Aldridge or Danny Green or, you know, some guys who are still relatively in their prime who are win now players? Or do you think in the end that Boston deal was still, you would have valued that draft pick and then maybe gotten that pick for them and then flipped that down the road to be all in on LeBron now?
If I knew that I had LeBron James for the next 3 or 4 years and there was going to be a long-term commitment, I'm not sure I would have even made a Kyrie Irving trade. I think I would have brought Kyrie into training camp and tried to, at least from a management perspective, tried to fix this. Because I thought that from a basketball perspective, that with Kyrie on the court would be better than any deal that you would get. On the other hand, if you couldn't fix it and you knew you had to eventually move him, I think then you would have gotten pieces that were more win now with try to get something, you probably wouldn't have got a Nets pick there. But you're right. I think that maybe San Antonio would have been more appealing as far as Green, Aldridge, maybe Murray there, because you get some veterans that have been in big games, and you also get a nice young point guard there, and then you can groom him behind Rose and Calderon. So I think it does change your yeah. – it certainly changed your mindset a lot.
Maybe you bring in – like having Aldridge and Love wouldn't have made sense, but maybe if Aldridge came in a deal, you flip Love and see – if you could build out your bench with a deal with him or get another pick to use elsewhere, they would have had a lot of options.
Yep, they would have. But it all comes down at the end. I mean, you've written about it that because you don't have a guarantee that LeBron James will be back, or he hasn't given you a guarantee that he's basically held you hostage right now for, and it did in this deal here. So, I mean, I give credit to Kobe Altman for getting as much as he did, although, you know, with this thing did drag out about a week here, because I don't think he would have been able to get much better elsewhere.
Bobby, as you well know, every episode of the Woj Pod is now available on Spotify. I know what you're thinking. Wait, Spotify has podcasts? Yes. Your place for all things music now has the world's most popular podcast. To stream the Woj Pod on Spotify, open the app, tap Browse, and look for us in the podcast section. Follow us and all your favorites to get new episodes dropped into your library as soon as they drop. For more, head to Spotify.com/podcasts. And now back to my guest, ESPN front office insider, Bobby Marks. Bobby, Isaiah Thomas's future. He'll be a free agent next summer, and this was his big payday coming. This is a player who was he's finishing a $27 million total deal. And now the hip injury, and I think in the end for all the talk and the conversation, you know, my sense is in talking to everybody on this, that if he's got to get back on the court this year at some point, he's got to show, get back to a high level, show he's healthy. And in the end, people are going to judge. No team is signing him without looking at his, probably without giving him a physical, looking at the medical records, looking at how he performed this year. But what do you think the impact for him is long term, based on not only the injury, but maybe these last 10 days, this last week?
Well, I think if free agency was Saturday and this was a signing trade and Cleveland was going to acquire him as a free agent in the signing trade, I think there would have been, you know, certainly there probably wouldn't have been a deal, and this would have had it would have probably impacted him long term from financially. I think, certainly when he gets back on the court and how he's able to perform will play into it. I thought it was kind of a little bit of an uphill battle to begin with, even if he was healthy. He's going to be 29 in February. He will certainly make a lot more than the $6.3 million that he earns this year. But, I mean, we wrote about it, Tim McMahon and I, just about the summer of 2018 and how the market was drying up based off 16 and 17. And although there'll be the Atlantas and Chicago's and maybe Brooklyn, Indiana, teams like that will have caps, Lakers possibly have cap space. I just didn't see that the day and age of paying a player $25 to $30 million long-term was going to be there anymore. I think Kyle Lowry this summer, yeah, certainly set the tone. You know, 3 years, $100 million. I mean, there's only 3 year contracts out there anymore. So I thought that, with Isaiah next summer, he probably still will if he comes back healthy. He'll make a lot of money, but not in the max $30 million number that maybe we thought about 2 years ago. So I think it's a wait and see when he gets back on the court, how he performs, and then it goes hand in hand as far as what team out there needs a point guard, if it's either Cleveland to resign or, needs to fill in a gap.
Yeah, and I think Kyle Lowry is a great comparison because, listen, we all thought Kyle was going to either he'd get the 5 years in Toronto or at worst 4 years in Toronto because that was matching up with what anybody else could give him. Elter was 4 years. And, you know, Kyle was healthy and he had had an all-star season, you know, a little bit older than Isaiah is right now. And, you know, he couldn't get better than the 3 years in Toronto because there really was not a big, big four-year offer out there on the market for him. And there were a few teams you thought early, maybe Philly, maybe Denver, and those weren't there. And I think it was less a statement about Kyle Lowry and more a statement about the market. You have lots of teams who do have established point guards. It's a golden age of point guards. And then you had a draft this past year where there were several point guards taken in the lottery. So teams like the Lakers, like Dallas had drafted, you know, even the Knicks had drafted point guards who they think are going to be cornerstone guys. And they're not looking to go out and spend, like you said, $25, $28 million on a point guard. And I think it's more circumstances for Kyle Lowry and maybe potentially Isaiah Thomas than it is a statement about them or their game or their value.
Well, and the 2017 draft class had, you know, had more of an impact based on all these good point guards and could be really good point guards more than probably the dwindling, you know, cap space. They kind of go hand in hand here. So, but it does come back to, you know, I think, as long as his agent is up front with him and he does come back, the Isaiah Thomas from Boston, plays in 55, 60 games, there'll certainly be a payday, but I just think you need to temper the expectations as far as what that number could be.
Well, the one thing you know with Isaiah is he's going to use all of this as fuel. This is a story of his career, right? I have one of the great single seasons in Celtics, maybe guard history anyway. And I still get traded and they still move me. And, you know, I got a text from him last night after the deal was finally completed. And I won't quote him, but he is he's a pretty motivated guy this morning, last night, today. And, you know, certainly with him, you know, you get that with him. Like he isn't, there's a hunger to him that allows him to do what he's done at 5 foot nothing in the NBA. And so, you know, you have that with Isaiah Thomas. Like that's who he is. You're going to get him with, you know, an absolute determination. And certainly that's what you want, you know, when you're going to go sign a guy in free agency.
He's had a chip on his shoulder since he's come into the league. You know, last pick in the draft, bounced around Sacramento to Phoenix to Boston, has been on a below average contract. Probably was I don't fault him for signing it at the time. It was basically the equivalent of the mid-level, but has been underpaid the last few seasons. Now he's got this injury that everyone doubts about him, and I'm sure that you're right. That is more fuel to the fire, that people are doubting him when he will be back and if he'll ever be the same player that he once was. And I think when he probably gets in the cold tub or does his rehab, starts his rehab this morning, that he is going to, you know, that's going to be extra. I mean, he didn't need the motivation, but that is certainly going to be the extra motivation.
Absolutely. Bobby, always fun to catch up here. I know we'll touch base soon. Have a great holiday weekend, man.
Thanks, Woj. You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, ESPN's front office insider, Bobby Marks. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. And, of course, a big thank you to our sponsors today, Gillette and Spotify. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Woj Pod. We'll catch you next time.